Holy fuck, also can we get back to the third twin? Because how does your brain go there and here? Outside, you can see that Forty has drunk his own Kool-Aid and crossed over to the dark side. He believes it. All of it. He brainwashed himself with compliments and coke, hookers and agents. And he didn't even come up with the fucking title. Captain Dave did. Outside, Love gets all hoppy and bouncy when Love is a Battlefield begins to play, and she is correct. This is war. I go upstairs and step into Love's giant shower. I have to believe in myself. I will fix this. I try to have my own celebration. People said those things about me, even if they think they were saying those things about 40. But then I think of the way my neck ached, the way I wrote at Intelligentsia and suffered through those other people around me, the motherfuckers with MacBook attitudes and loud voices. So I just had a meeting about directing that McDonald's commercial, and I'm thinking I might just do it. And it was me slaving, rushing like a madman to my P.O. box to keep up my cover, the book-selling business that 40 suggested as a way to allay suspicions of my being a gold digger. The door opens. It's Love. "Hey," she says. "Got room for me?" I nod, and all the time, I was concerned about the wrong man. I wasted my time worrying about Milo when I should have been keeping eyes on 40. Milo was never a threat. He loves Love, and she doesn't love him back, and most of the time in life, I'm starting to realize, love is not the problem. It's the people like 40, like Amy, like Beck, the people who are loveless. And it's possible to know this right away. 40 labeled me old sport because he didn't want me to have a name. It is possible to know people. They show you who they are. You just have to be looking. Love says if I still want to be a writer, 40 could give me pointers, and I love her too much to tell her the truth. They were in the womb together. They remember the 80s together. They were born together, and they will take it to the grave together. Just the same, I step out of the shower. I text 40. We need to talk. Chapter 40. 40 never wrote back. Not just to me. He didn't write back to Love, or his mother, or his father, or Milo. He fell off the face of the fucking earth. Which is odd behavior for someone who just scored a two-picture deal. His absence is a wrecking ball, and Love is a tired, brittle, worried mess, and this is what I cannot allow. I can't let him do this to her, to us. He can steal all my scripts, fine. But he can't torture Love. She knew right away what he was up to. 4 days ago, 8 hours after I texted him, she made a declaration. "I'm calling it," she said. "He's not sick. He didn't break his phone. He's on a bender." Love's parents came over, worried, pacing. "Are we sure he isn't in Malibu? What about that loft downtown he bought a while back?" Dottie is such a mother. She didn't want to think it was a bender.
"I'm sure he's off celebrating," she insisted. "Don't jump to the worst conclusion."
"Celebrating with who?" Love asked.
"Mom, I won't jump to conclusions, but please don't go into denial already."
Ray told Love not to get so worked up. "He's 35 years old," he said. "He's not a baby." They left, and I tried to make Love feel better, but it was impossible.
"I hate the way they go into denial," she said. "He's my twin, and I know when something's wrong. He goes on benders."
Love texted his dealer, Slim, but the text bounced back. She threw her phone down.
"Fucking 40, she snapped. "Of course his fucking drug dealer has a new fucking number. That's what they do, they're drug dealers."
That was 4 days ago, and 40 is officially on a bender. He hasn't answered calls or texts or emails, and he is an even bigger asshole than I realized.
"I miss him so much, I feel crazy," she says when we wake up. "I literally feel like I'm going crazy."
"Me too," I say, but she blows up at me. She's in a terrible mood, worse every day, and whatever I say is wrong. And she doesn't know that he fucked me over and I have to sit in this house and pretend to care about him, pretend that I'm not sitting here in shock. There's a knock on the door.
"Babies?" It's Love's mom, again. Because this is how it is now. They show up in the morning and they're here puttering around all day, all night.
Are you decent?
Yes, Love shouts with no regard for my morning wood. Dottie comes into the room and flops onto the bed.
Did I not love him enough? You know, your daddy and I found out about his big deal from the trades.
Every day, we go over the events. I have to listen to the same fucking conversation, with Love assuring her mother that she did most certainly love them enough. I've grown too familiar with Love's mother's habits, the way she nervously twists her rings around her fingers, the way she brings a different purse every day, even though all we do is sit in the house and speculate. I picture her at home in Bel Air, moving all her pills and credit cards and blotting papers and lipsticks from one purse into another. Ray calls from downstairs.
I got eggs.
Yesterday it was, I got French toasties. And the day before that it was, I got huevos rancheros. And Love gets out of bed without looking at me. She slips into her robe and helps her mother off the bed and they walk away, telling each other how wonderful they are, how great a daughter Love is, how loving a mother Dottie is. Downstairs, Ray tells me to have a seat, and now it begins again. His questions about my business. Ray loves me. Ray wants to invest in me. Ray believes in books. Once upon a time, before 40 got a two-picture deal and disappeared, Dottie loved me too, but now she resents me. She doesn't like Ray treating me with such love and acceptance. She doesn't eat her eggs. Ray sighs. What's the matter now?
Sometimes you don't sound like someone whose son is missing, she says. Sometimes you sound downright chipper.
Pardon me for not being surprised, he says. I missed the memo where we were told to act as if there's anything surprising about this mess.
You shut it, she says.
She looks at me, at her husband.
Have some respect for your son.
Ray slams the refrigerator door shut and Forty has destroyed them. They were so happy before, and the only thing that makes them stop fighting is Love, who starts crying and banging her fists and begging them to stop.
I can't take this. You can't do this now. You just can't.
And now her mother is soothing her, and her father has them both in a bear hug, and they promise her it's going to be okay. We'll get through this as a family, Lovebug, he says. We always do. I learned that Forty's favorite game as a child was hide-and-seek. He never stopped playing. When things go well for him, he self-destructs, he hides. The day he got into grad school at UCLA, he went to a racetrack and drove his car into the wall. It was an accident, but at the same time, we all know it's possible when we get into a fucking sports car. 2 days before Love's wedding, a happy time for all, Forty took off to go skiing via helicopter. He fell, of course, and no one could locate him for days. Love's wedding had to be postponed. Forty was found in the woods, and he claimed he was too disoriented to use his phone. One of the guys on the rescue squad lost a finger trying to find him. After breakfast, Love and I go outside so she can water her plants. Love, I say, maybe we should get out of the house, you know, go to a movie or something.
A movie?
She lashes out at me, brandishing her hose.
How can I go to a movie when my brother is missing?
Because he always turns up.
You don't get it because you're not close with your family, she says. I don't mean that in a bad way, but just please don't say things like, how about we go to a movie? I ain't to be here. I can't be in a movie theater and get a call that he's...
And she's crying again. And I swear, she's crying because she feels guilty because she wishes he would die and leave her alone already. He is tedious, and he lacks imagination, and he stole from me, and he is a vampire, sucking the life out of his sister. I hold her.
Joe?
Love says. Here we go again.
Yeah?
When he showed up, and we found out about his deal, you didn't look happy.
Love, we were in the fucking pool. We were literally in the fucking pool. She tosses her hose.
No, she says. It's not about that. You looked mad.
I wasn't mad. I say, and I want so badly to tell her I wrote those scripts, but if I tell her now, while 40 is gone, she will bury me. She sprays her cactuses, as if they need water. No, she says, you were definitely mad. I have no choice here. Okay, I say, you're right. You just told me how you're done with the business and you don't want to act. And he walks in and he sold his movies and I was like, well, there goes that. Now you're going to want to be in his movies.
Because I can't think for myself?
No, I say, because you're twins. Because you work together, because of course he'd want his sister to be in his movies.
But I literally just told you I was done with that, she says. I literally told you I never want to act again. Just tell me why you weren't happy for him, why you went off and skulked in the house. I mean, there's something going on.
I love your brother, I lie.
Then why didn't you hug him and be like, yes?
She drops the hose. She paces.
Never mind, she says. This happens every time I go out with someone. At first you act like you love my brother and it's cool and you want to be friends, but then the minute he, I don't know, needs something from you, you turn your back on him.
He didn't need anything from me, I say.
He got a fucking deal. He needed you to be happy for him.
She sniffles.
He needed you to love him. I mean, why couldn't you just have hugged him and been there for him? Why did you have to run away?
So now it's my fault that 40 ran away and Love's father is calling us in for another feeding. I try to talk to Love, but she says now isn't the time. She isn't the same girl she was 4 days ago, and if this keeps up, she won't love me anymore. She is a snowman melting, a phone dying, a plant wilting. I go inside and eat my guac and talk about books with her parents, and I am a limp dick. Her parents decide to go to a movie, ha, and I don't say, see, I told you so. They go, and we're alone, and we sit on her giant sectional, and once again, whatever I say is wrong. If I tell her it's going to be okay, she says I have no way of knowing that. If I tell her I love her, she says she can't deal with me right now. If I ask her what I can do, she tells me there's nothing anyone can do. If I try to make her laugh, she says she doesn't want to laugh. If I get upset, she says she can't deal with one more person losing their shit. Her parents come back. Any word? Ray asks.
No,
Love says. Dottie tells us that it finally hit Ray. They didn't make it to a movie theater. They just went to 40's condo above Sunset. They think he's dead. They can feel it. I try to be positive because that's what they say to do in these situations, but it doesn't work. I try to cheer up Ray and watch Fast Five with him, and Love says I'm abandoning her. I leave Ray in the movie and follow her, and she snaps at me.
Well, now you're abandoning him.
I can't cure Love when she's sick like this, sitting in the dark with her headphones on, blocking out the world, watching things as she was when we met, and I understand now that she was sad that day, too. She had just had sex with Milo. She was hating herself, blaming herself for leading him on. And right now, 40 is the one who ran away, and he did that, but she is blaming herself, as if his fuck-ups are her fault. There is a codependency between twins that can't be broken. And then I get a text. It's 40. The first thing I do is look around to make sure Love and Ray and Dottie are all far away from me, and they are. I unlock my phone. I read, "Feel like grabbing some grub, old sport?" Unfucking believable. His family is on a vigil, and he doesn't offer any explanation. Does he not care about them? Does he not remember when he stole intellectual property from me? I write back, "Where and when?" He writes back, "Now, and the 101. I put my hands on Love's shoulders. She takes her headphones off and looks up at me. "I'm gonna go find 40. I can't just sit here and do nothing." She reaches out to me.
"How?" she asks. "What do you even mean?"
"I mean I'll find him," I say. "I'll drive around. I'll go to his haunts."
"Joe," she says, brightening, "you're amazing. Thank you."
"You don't need to say that," I say, and I kiss her hand. "You're the amazing one, and the least I can do is get in the car and try and bring him home." Love nods.
"I'm so sorry."
I know I'm being a royal fucking bitch. I don't know how to control it, and I hate myself for not having figured out how to control it yet. 35 fucking years.
I kiss the top of her perfect head. Life is long, I tell her. You're gonna be fine. I'm gonna find him and sober him up, whatever it takes. I'm gonna be with him. And then we're gonna come back here, and he's gonna be with us, and I'm gonna take care of him so I can take care of you.
I love you. Be safe,
she calls as I leave the house.
The person she should worry about is her brother.
He's hit my last nerve, and if he isn't calling to apologize for stealing my scripts, fucking me over, and torturing his family, then he is going to be roadkill on the fucking 101.
Chapter 41. I drive fast, and when I get to the 101 diner from Swingers, 40's already in a booth. Red-faced and high, feet up, dirty toes in old huaraches, and he's flirting with a waitress and nursing a beer. My least favorite song in the world comes on, the song that was playing in LAX when I arrived, that stupid fucking Tom Tom Club song. And as I walk to 40's table, the song feels like an omen. Just the same, I am a fair person. I give 40 the benefit of the doubt. Surely he's been squirreled away, racked with guilt over what he's done to his family, to me. Surely this is the scene in his sad life when he comes to Jesus, when he begs for forgiveness.
40, I say as I sit down in the booth. We're all having a nervous breakdown looking for you. What the fuck?
Whoa, he says. I sense a little hostility.
Yeah, I say. Call your sister.
You look a little piquant, old sport.
Only assholes say piquant, and I know that this is not the moment where he sees the light, where he becomes a human and cops to his horrible behavior. He called me here because he's full of cocaine, and he hums along to the frothy, bratty pop as he peruses the menu. I order a blackened chicken sandwich, and he orders a BBB, bacon, bacon, and bacon sandwich. And he puts down his menu.
Joe, he begins. I have to say that I am hurt.
I'm sorry to hear that, I say. But do me a favor, before we get into anything, call your sister. He shakes his head.
I know you think I screwed you over somehow, but you need to remember that I've been working on these scripts for years.
Let's not get into that now, I say. I just want your family to know you're okay.
Well, I'm not okay, he snaps. You couldn't even congratulate me properly. I get the news of my life and you turn into a jealous little bitch.
40, we had a deal. I stop. I take a deep breath. This is not why I came here.
It doesn't matter. What matters is call your sister. But he's exasperated. A deal? Do you know how many people have pitched in on these projects over the years? That's what this business is. We read each other's shit. There was no deal. A deal is what I have with Megan.
Every time he says Megan, my aspirations flare. I won't let them do me in and distract me. I'm here for one reason. He either gets to call his family and have one more shot at life, or he gets to abuse his family and suffer the consequences. The music is too loud, and he goes off on how the scripts are his. He paints a picture wherein I am the shady one, the one who didn't even want to tell Love that we were talking about maybe doing something together.
You know, I'm actually kind of impressed. Separation of church and state, he winks. My dad would have told my mom in a fucking heartbeat, but you don't let your dick get in the way of your brain.
He smacks my shoulder. Whoa, I say. I want to bash his face in and set him straight. I count to three. Love has nothing to do with the deal we made. And I should have told Love. I regret not telling her. I want a time machine. Secrets erode trust, and that's how I got into this mess. Had I told Love about 40's proposal, she would have lifted her little hand to her chest and said,
"Ooh, Joe, I'm not sure that's such a good idea."
But you can't go back in time. I know this from the mug of fucking piss.
Old sport, can you fucking just believe it?
Forty says. How cool is it, right? Megan fucking Ellison. I still can't believe it, but at the same time, I can. You know how that is? How unlike the lottery it is? Meaning that there's nothing random about the good fortune. You do the work. Eventually you get paid. Then you get laid.
He twiddles his thumbs and looks at me so directly, like a bear facing a human in a backyard in New Hampshire.
You maybe want to call your sister? I ask him.
I never use my phone during a meal, he says.
Forty whistles at the waitress and asks her for a bottle of their worst champagne, and she laughs, as if he's so funny, and comes back to us with two small bottles of white wine.
What are we toasting?
She asks.
My career, he says. I'm blowing up.
She says the drinks are on her, and she winks.
I would eat that ass, Forty says, and I generally don't do that.
I slam the table. Forty. He looks at me and moans.
Old sport, I did not invite you here to be lame, he says. Now, you should be thanking me. You did some beautiful tweaks on my work. You're well on your way to a great career.
I didn't tweak anything, I snarl. He slumps like I'm so boring, like I'm stupid.
When Harry Met Sally, Jaws, do you know what these movies have in common?
Fuck off, I snap.
I know where he's going. I tell you what they have in common, he says, and he tells me what I already know. The famous lines about orgasms and big boats were improvised. But do the actors get credit? Hell no. Do they get co-writing accolades? Fuck no. Are they earning royalties on that gold? Hell no.
That's different and you know it. He shakes his head.
You just don't get it, he says. You waltz into this town and you think it owes you something because what? Because you fuck my sister and you have a flair for dialogue?
The waitress brings beers.
These are for you guys to keep up the celebration.
Forty grins.
You're a doll. Porcelain doll.
She smiles.
No, she says. I'm slightly more flexible.
She leaves and his eyes are gone.
Wouldn't it be aces if the waitresses in here were on rollerblades?
He squirts ketchup on a napkin for seemingly no reason.
You should work that into something. Roller skates are killer on film. Boogie Nights meets, I don't know, you know?
The waitress returns with a shake.
On the house, she says. The chef read about you in the Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood, where the rich don't have to pay for anything, and Forty thanks her and lowers his chin and nods. He pulls his straw out of the case and sips his shake.
I drink my milkshake, he says. Get it? Like you think I'm drinking your milkshake? But see, the chef knows, the waitress knows, they know what's up.
Fuck you, I snap. He shakes his head and tells me I need to watch out for my ego. He says I didn't kiss Barry Stein's ass the right way. He preaches about my lack of respect. I don't know what it is to pitch and hear the word no and go back and try again.
15 years I've been at this, he says. For 15 years I've been developing my brand, getting my name out there, generating buzz. 15 years of driving to studios and telling my stories to executives and producers who have told me they love me and they love it and they want it. And then a week, 2 weeks later, nothing.
He's fuming now. Give a miserable person an ice cream cone and the miserable person will nosh, digest, and go back to being miserable.
I just can't wait for the look on Milo's face, right?
You should really call Love, I say. She's literally worried sick. He's brittle, pissed.
She's fine, he says. They're all fine.
The food comes. He's happy again. He plows into his bacon sandwich and I don't touch mine. He's failed his test, and I tried, I really did. But this codependent twin saga existed before I got here. 40 fucking with Love, Love forgiving him no matter what. My job is to end it. I see that, I will do that. For love. As an apology for the mess I made. The way I enabled this selfish louse. I can't decide how I'm gonna kill him, but I do know that when rich people die, the cops actually care. The first thing they try to figure out is the motivation. I can't risk those emails we exchanged biting me in the ass. 40, I say. You should delete all of our emails, you know, about the scripts. Just in case someone were to hack into your account. You want to make sure that there's nothing, well, you know what I mean. He laughs and chokes and sips beer. See, only someone fresh off the boat would say something like that. He says, you can go to a lawyer right now, have fun. Good luck paying the retainer. Oh, and good luck finding anyone who wants to work with a guy who lawyers up like a fucking baby when his girlfriend's brother gets a sweet deal. He burps. You can be litigious, or you can be creative, but you can't be litigious and creative. Nobody wants to get in the sandbox with the guy who sues people. I tell him I'm just looking out for him. I know a reporter who tries to hack into shit all the time, I explain. You don't want a paper trail. He nods. I do see your point, he says. Now he's in his phone, swiping. The waitress comes back with a platter of sweet potato fries just because. 40 is sobering up. That was good advice, he says. But it's also a bummer. This is the kind of shit you learn from a lawyer, not a writer. We could get something going together, but I'm not bringing a litigious prick anywhere. I don't like litigious pricks. You need to tell me that you're not going to be a litigious prick. At the counter, a different waitress flirts with an aspiring writer who's probably been trying to fuck her and finish his screenplay for months. He asks for a side of guac, and she tells him that it's $2 extra. That's how it works here. The guy who deserves free guac doesn't get free guac. 40 wipes his mouth and pushes his plate away. You know, he says, and now he reaches for the big guns. My sister loves me very, very much. I know that, 40, I say. I do. He runs his hands through his greasy hair. You got love, he says. Don't be a pig. Stop looking for money. It doesn't make you happy. All the money and all the fame, it's nothing without love. I remind him of his family hunkered down at Love's house. His eyes are empty. He is the boy named 40, the hapless, hopeless brother of Love. Yeah, he says. There's nothing Ray and Dot love more than a party, even a search party. My fam damily, there's something, right? He's an outsider and he knows it, and he'll never stop punishing them. When I tell him they love him, I sound like I'm lying. Lies sound like lies, and it's impossible to know which came first, the selfish, repugnant nature of this man or the missteps of his nurturers. What I do know, if he stays around, he will destroy everything between me and Love. His family is right. He is self-destructive, but he is also outwardly destructive. Killing him will be the greatest risk of my life. I could lose Love, but it will, of course, yield the greatest reward. I will have Love without 40. I pick up the check. I pay cash. I've learned. Outside, 40 picks at his teeth with a toothpick. Well, I'm off to Vegas to bang out another script. His car pulls up, big and black. 40, I say. I know you're not gonna write. He laughs. Oh, right. But it's good, you know, good practice for the talk shows and shit, he says. Fucking asshole. Hey, I say. What do you want me to tell your family? That vacant stare again. He knows they love Love more than they love him. I'm sure that's true in most families, and some kids shrug it off. But other kids, kids like 40, I bet he made the same face at every birthday party when Love got just a few more presents than he did, and when her mom hugged her and just held on for a teensy bit longer. Forty did not get enough love. A lot of people don't. But the thing is, he's twinned with someone who got so much love that she is love. And that's gotta be hard. He shrugs.
Let my mom stress out and starve for a few more days, he says. She's been starting to pork up, old sport. We don't want that, right?
My sympathy evaporates. So you don't want me to tell them you're okay?
They need to back off, he says. I'm not in fucking high school.
Reverse psychology 101 and his eyes pop.
You know what I do want, though? He begins. Old sport, you should come to Vegas. We can bang out a new script. Hangover meets hangover.
The hangover can't meet the hangover because the hangover is the hangover, and I tell him no. Maybe next time. Definitely next time. He shrugs. I see a bag of drugs in his car. Literally, a bag of drugs. He raises his hand for a high five, and the next time I touch him, it will be different. I will be strangling him. Chapter 42. 7,000 hours later, I'm getting close to Vegas, and the lights of the city twinkle in the distance the way they did in Swingers. I made it, and it wasn't easy. When I told Love that I had a hunch that Forty was in Vegas, she was befuddled.
Joe, she said, I'm his twin. We have that psychic twin thing, and I think I would be the one to know if he was in Vegas.
I know what you mean, I reasoned. I folded my shirts into one of Love's black suitcases. But I think when you're upset like this, it has to affect your radar. She sat on the bed.
Should I go with you?
I kissed the top of her head. No, I said. I got this.
You really want that boyfriend of the year trophy, don't you?
She asked teasingly. So I fucked her good and hard, and then I went to Hollywood Boulevard to pick up some items for my Captain America costume. Not the superhero, the generic Vegas bro. I got a Colts jersey and a baseball cap. I let the guy at the store choose. I was feeling lucky. I was going to Vegas. And now I'm almost here. I see it in the distance, getting closer. My balls drop. It's Vegas. It really is. It's brighter than it is in the movies, and it's uglier as I get closer. Every sign a threat. Last casino for 20 miles, and last gas, and I pull over. I put on my Dodgers hat. I tear the tag off my Colts jersey and pull it on. Mr. Average America. I get back on the road. On the strip at a stoplight, I see a woman pull her pants down, squat, and defecate. Tourists abound. People smoke cigarettes and push their babies in carriages, and it's hot, and I want to stare at all of it. The sheer volume of lights, the width of the sidewalks, the throngs of people, young and old, fat and American. I allow myself a few minutes to dork out and blast Elvis, and the fountains at the Bellagio are grander in real life. I tell Love I made it, and she tells me to start at Caesar's.
This isn't a twin thing, she says. It's a 40 thing. He says they have the best tables.
Love was wrong. 40 is not at Caesar's, and everything here is so grandiose. The floor of the casino is a sprawling wide pasture, and the slot machines are immovable cows blocking my view. There are pods of blackjack tables, people everywhere, blasting music, machines making noise. I have a burner phone. I could call him, but I don't want to call him until I have eyes on him. Love calls again.
So my dad got word from our host at the Bellagio, she says. Apparently he's over there.
Okay, I say. I'm going there now. I walk fast. The air is dry and random dudes high-five me. Colts! And I listen to my pool mashup and I reach the fountains. There is so much pomp leading up to the front entrance. Oversized revolving doors, giant glass flowers on the ceiling behind the front desk. Businessmen and hookers fill a lounge. I pass a bay of blackjack tables where the minimum bet is $10. I move on, weaving my way through cocktail waitresses and skimpy sequined get-ups, couples fighting, a woman on the phone with her bank, cash advance, a toddler crying, a mother telling him to hold on, baby, mommy's almost done, as if gambling is a job. It's disorienting the way every area is identical. Tables and slots, tables and slots. I reach a clearing, and I see a hangover slot machine, and he's not there, and I walk toward another mess of tables, white leather chairs, more of a palace than Caesar's, and that's why 40 is here, sitting in a white chair at a blackjack table. His hair is a wreck. He's wearing two pairs of fucking Wayfarers, one pair on his head, one on his face. His collared shirt is wrinkled, and his feet are grimy, and he's got them propped up on two chairs, like he owns the joint. He's playing three hands, smoking two cigarettes. Chips fall out of his pocket, and he doesn't bend over to retrieve them. I want to bash his head into the table, but the ceilings are high, and the cameras are everywhere. I sit down at a slot machine. Texas tea. I put in $10. I text Love. I've looked and looked, and I haven't seen him, but I'll keep looking. She writes back, "My dad says thank you. You are the best." I write back, "We'll find him." I play 2 cents a round on Texas tea, and 40 plays $1,000 a hand on his three hands. He's losing. He is loud. Even several feet away, I can hear him. He sits with a hooker, and he periodically grabs her neck and licks her chest. A Chinese lady stares at him disapprovingly. "I'm sorry if I offend you, honey, but this is Vegas, and if I want to blow lines off Miss Molly Tupelo's lovely enhanced chesticles, then I will do it all night long." The Chinese woman gets up and walks away, and I can't believe the city is so crowded. 40 loses a hand. "Is that 'cause I pissed off the China woman?" he asks. "Because if that's the case, then you're gonna have to call the pit boss." He smashes the table with his drink. "Fuck this!" 40 walks 5 feet and sits down at another table, and it all happens again. A girl in a short skirt sits down next to him. A new old Asian woman tries to sit down too. 40 grabs the seat. "Does it look like I want company, lady?" He knocks back his whiskey. "Fucking A, back off." The girl in the short skirt laughs and tells him he's funny. He says she can stay, but only if she's lucky. And she says she hopes so, and I officially hate it here. The dealer tries. "Maybe a little lady luck would do you some good, sir." 40 sneers. "I'd rather have some face cards." "You know what? Fuck this." And he's up, and I leap to follow him, but no. He sits at a neighboring table. He lights up next to a pregnant woman. "Do you mind?" she asks. She points at her protruding belly. "You should be at a non-smoking table," he says. He blows smoke into the air. "Or really, you should be home. You fucking pregnant people, you own the whole world. Do you really need to own this too? I can't smoke anywhere because of you, and you really need to tell me I can't smoke in fucking Vegas?" The dealer asks him to quiet down, and 40 rises. "Do you know who I am? Motherfucker, I own this city. I just sold a screenplay that takes place in this fucking city for more money than you'll see in your whole fucking life." My hat itches and I've lost $9 at Texas Tea. The dealer is trying hard not to laugh. 40 knocks his drink onto the floor and snaps his finger at a waitress. "I'm empty, sweetheart." She looks tired. In Vegas, they force the waitresses to walk around in sequined bathing suits and pantyhose. The woman says she's delivering drinks and she'll be back to take orders after she drops off her drinks. 40 is irate. "I don't care what you're doing," he says. "Why the fuck do you think I care what you're doing, honey? Do I look like I care? I told you, I want a gimlet. Goose, gimlet. Now. As in now."
"When I come back, I can't..."
He barks.
"Get me a fucking goosey goose gimlet!"
She walks away and the boss man in the pit, I've seen Casino 1,000 times, approaches 40.
"Mr. Quinn," he says, "we're so happy to have you back. I hope you're having fun gaming with us."
"Rocco,"
40 says.
It's a hell of a lot more fun to game when you've got a nice big goosey gimlet. What the hell is going on here?
Rocco tries to resolve the gimlet situation while Forty loses a few thousand more dollars and I win 52 cents at Texas Tea.
Forty is on the move. I follow him. My pants itch.
He cruises around the casino, and every few feet, he ducks into a row of slot machines and takes a bump of blow. He stumbles up to a depressed-looking leggy girl in a tight dress at a slot machine and pulls her hair. She yelps.
What the fuck, dude? Get your hands off me!
How much? He asks. I want to go for a ride.
I'm not a fucking hooker, motherfucker, she says. I'm a teacher.
I can get hot for that, he says. He reaches for her. How much?
She smacks him with her purse.
Stop it!
He laughs.
Honey, honestly, by the look of your dress, you could use the money. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean?
She spits at him and he doesn't wipe off her saliva. He sits down at the machine. He loses $100. A hooker witnesses his fight and approaches, so obvious, Vegas. Why didn't Delilah just move here? And she tells Forty she wants to party.
He looks her up and down. I'd love to, sweetheart, but I'm not a homo.
She stares at him. He slips her $100 bill.
Take this C-note to the craps table and get it up there and do yourself a favor and go buy some tits.
She doesn't register any emotion. She says, thank you, baby, and walks away, and this is the most depressing place I've ever been. There are no clocks or windows, and the people are either incredibly sloppy or incredibly overdressed. Forty walks up to a craps table and spills a drink. People boo him.
Yeah, he says. Boo fucking who? Do you people know that I have a two-picture deal at Annapurna?
Yeah. Have fun with your boring fucking lives. He walks away. Nobody at the table knows what Annapurna is. He sits down at a new blackjack table and gets a marker for 50 grand. People are gathering to watch and he is bragging about being a huge writer. When people ask if he's here alone, he says,
I'm with my girlfriend, Love. She's upstairs.
My girlfriend, Love. I shudder. The song Born in the USA comes on and he groans.
I hate Bruce Springsteen, he says. Can we do something about this? Goddamn whiny Democrat. We get it. You're from New Jersey and you think it's cool to be poor. Just fuck off already.
The dealer says he prefers the song Thunder Road. Forty huffs.
You also probably think a Chevy is as solid as a Beamer. No offense. But there is such a thing in this world as fucking wrong. Like these cards. Is there a rule against giving out tens in this shithole? And about 100 years ago, I ordered some gimlets.
He sat down 10 seconds ago, but nobody tells him he is wrong, and Thunder Road is a great fucking song. I sit down at a hangover slot machine. I lose $10 in a few seconds, and 40 splits tens. I know this because the dealer calls it out to the pit boss and the people standing around are gasping. He loses. A newly married couple enters the bar and everybody claps and Forty stands up and whistles with his hands. He motions for the band to stop playing. The lead singer looks at the doorway where a man stands with his arms crossed. He nods. This really is Forty's playground. Forty goes on stage and grabs the mic.
First of all, he says, congratulations.
Everybody cheers. He is the good guy, fun guy. He high-fives the groom. He kisses the bride on the cheek.
Now, let's have some fun, he says. As it happens, I am here to celebrate too. I just sold 2 scripts to Megan fucking Ellison.
He waits for a reaction. Still nobody knows her name.
Point is, I made some money and I want to spread the love around.
Applause, obviously.
And this is what I want to do. Groom, get the fuck up here.
The groom gets the fuck up here and he is a small guy, shorter than his wife, He seems shy. He has a big smile, big teeth. They're too big for his face. His wife cheers.
What's your name, son?
Greg, he says.
Mr. and Mrs. Greg and Leah Loomis from New Township, New Jersey.
Greg has probably never said that many words out loud to a group this size. 40 motions for everyone to quiet down, and he waves the bride on stage. He puts his arm around Greg.
Greg, he says, you got a beautiful bride, and you got a long life ahead.
There's a mixed response. Some laugh, some are disgusted.
So why not let me give you guys a wedding present you'll remember forever?
He says. Greg, he raises his eyebrows up and down and up and down.
I'll give you 10 if you let me kiss your wife. Right here, right now.
Greg the groom doesn't punch 40. People boo. They hiss. Some people whistle. They want to see it. 40 takes $5,000 chips out of his pocket.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
he exclaims. More of the same, booing and cheering. America. And the bride is pleading with the husband. I think she's saying something about the mortgage. The groom is turning redder by the second, and the bride does a shot, and 40 plays with his chips, and finally the bride wins. She is the alpha. She will choose their vacations, program the DVR, demand him to renovate the man cave he undoubtedly has where he roots for his teams, eats his salsa. No guac for these two. They're not from that part of America. She finishes slapping on lipstick and she gets up on stage. 40 kicks.
Yes!
He dips the bride. He grazes her boob and he never said anything about feeling her up, booing and cheering. And he leans over and grabs her ass hard. And he shoves his tongue down her throat. I watch the groom. He looks broken. 10 minutes ago, he was in love. He was just married. And now, he's just fucked over. 40 releases the bride, and she wipes her mouth, and she puts her hand out, and 40 tosses the chips on the floor and pumps his fists. So now, of course, there are a million people who would kill this guy. The lead singer takes the mic, and the bride hugs the groom, but you can tell 40 ruined their marriage. Their odds of happiness are lower now than they were before they met 40 Quinn. 40 takes off again, meandering through the floor of the casino. I follow him and text him from my burner phone. It's snowing at the Sapphire. 40 writes back, ? Me. It's Slim. New phone. Your sister's looking for you. 40. Heavy snow? Better than last time, I hope. Me. Yes. Sapphire in 20. 40. Leaving Bellagio now. But he's not leaving Bellagio now. He's settling into another white leather chair, motioning for the dealer to deal, as if he doesn't know that the dealer can't deal to him while he's texting. He writes, I heard there's hella ice out there, too. I confirm that I have hella ice, and I park myself at a slot machine with a lobster theme. I insert my ticket, now worth only $2.11. 40 is the world's least interesting man, bragging to the disinterested players around him about his career being on fire, as if people came to this place to talk about work. My machine goes berserk. The screen changes, and an animated lobster man introduces himself to me. The woman next to me says it's a bonus round, and the fisherman reaches into the water and pulls out cages of lobsters. My $2.11 turns into $143.21. The house doesn't always win, and I know when to walk away. I take my ticket to a machine and cash out. I text 40. Snow ice and snow bunnies too, gotta come now. 40 gets off his ass and leaves the casino. He lost a lot of money, but I walk through the casino a winner. I find my car in the garage and I text Love. Any word? She writes back. Nothing, but he's probably passed out in some hooker's bed by now. I write back. Don't worry, I'll find them. Things are gonna change. They are. And it's the truth. If anything, this trip to Vegas has opened my eyes to what it's been like for Love all these years. She is back in L.A. texting him, and here he is ignoring her, feeding her fear, eating away at her life. He's a parasite, a user, and I think he enjoys torturing love. I can't blame Ray and Dottie. No parents do everything right. No parents can control how they love their children. But this isn't about blame. This is about the love of my life. The pain in her eyes. The weakness in her voice. The way she is choking on his silence. I can't let him smother her anymore. I love her too much for that.
Chapter 43. 20 minutes later, Forty slips out of his cab and moseys to the back of this off-strip, derelict gas station. He's wearing a stupid backpack, like a kid going to camp, expecting to see his counselor/dealer. I step out of my car and smile, especially at the security camera that hangs by a thread, decimated, cracked, the reason I chose this particular spot.
Old sport!
Only joy registers on his bloated face as he gallops toward me and throws his arms around me. His hug is too hard and he reeks.
What are you doing here?
He yells.
It's a long story, I say. What are you doing here? I was supposed to meet my dealer, but he didn't show. Luckily, I'm well equipped.
Forty shrugs and pats his backpack.
Does this mean... are you finally good with everything? Down to party?
I nod, even though I hate drugs. Hate the way people get around them. The need that comes through.
Fucking Goldberg,
he sings, and then he's on about his molly and his blow, his this and his that. He wipes his fat hair off his stretched face.
You know, I know we had some talk, some iffiness of the business, but that's what it is, my friend. Business gets whack and shit happens, and then what do? You smoke a little crack.
He winks and slips into my car with his fucking backpack. We need this, he goes on.
I bet this is your first time in Vegas, right? Professor goes to Vegas. I love it.
His eyes narrow, curious.
Where's my sis?
At home, I say, with your parents.
Nice, he says.
He cracks open a 40-ounce can of malt liquor. It pops and fizzes.
You relationship people, I don't know how you do it.
He burps and beer dribbles down his chin.
You feel like you need to bring home the bacon and the big dick and make them babies and dance that dance. And it's like, fuck that. I answer to me and me alone. Fuck love.
He laughs.
You know what I mean? Not love, love. I love my sister. She's my rock. Do you know how many times she texted me today?
I count to 2. It doesn't help.
Did you write back to her?
He shakes his head.
It's that twin thing. She's my rock. She knows I split sometimes. She gets me.
You want a bump? Selfish motherfucking pig druggy love wrecker.
I'm good,
I say. I think about those situations when women are pregnant with twins and the doctors have to go in and remove the fetus that is sucking the life out of the other. It's the humane thing to do. Sometimes one must die so that the other can live. Biology isn't sentimental. None of Love's other boyfriends had the balls to end 40, but I do. I look at him, scrolling through his texts from her. He only feels loved when she's a wreck, worried about him, consumed. Some people are strong enough to share a womb and a birthday. Love is. 40 isn't.
Check out the ass on that ass,
he says, pointing to a high school girl looking for the bathroom.
Should we take her with us?
I want to kill him. Now. In this rental. I start the car. I can't kill him here. I grip the wheel. He pounds the roof. The schoolgirl found the bathroom. She's safe. We go. Silence only lasts for 2 lights, and then he's at it again.
You and my sister are my fucking rock, he says. You take care of her else, right? You know that, right? Like you get that you are a dead man if you fuck her over?
I clench the wheel tighter. You're a good brother,
I'm the best brother, he says. The motherfucking best.
He pulls a little baggie out of his pocket and sniffs. I pull onto the freeway and he is so high that he doesn't ask where we're going. He only rants about how he's never getting married and how he's going to live with me in love and all the fun we're going to have. He's sealing the deal on his death and the car hums and we are farther and farther from the bright lights and there are fewer cars all the time. The inside of Forty's mind is a grave place and it's right next to me, soaking up the oxygen. He is the anti-love and he confesses that he shops at Ralph's.
It's fucking groceries, he sneers. It's food. And you know what food is, old sport? It's pre-shit. That's all. It's pre-shit and we need it to survive. And it used to be a fucking pain for the cavemen, right, my friend? I mean, you had to get out there with your club and whack at woolly mammoths and drag that shit home before the flies got all up in it. And that's why food was a fucking pain. But come on, it's modern time. Food is fucking easy.
He rubs his nose and shakes his head.
All you do is go in, you get your tacos, and you fucking eat. People like my parents, they want to act like it fucking matters so much. Like what you eat for dinner is so interesting, but it's not. It's fucking food. Just eat it and shit it and be done with it. And don't feel special because you eat that shit with someone. Because in the end, we all shit alone. Who the fuck cares if you ate the pre-shit with someone if you shit alone on a toilet, door closed, whammo.
He snorts more cocaine. I could pull over and roll him out the door, but he's on so much blow right now that he would probably just turn into a roadrunner, catch up to me, and jump back in.
I could eat a taco, he says. Fucking chomp right into that thing.
He wants to call love. I panic and my hand slips on the wheel. I sweat. I tell him we had sort of a fight.
Then maybe we shan't, he says.
He rolls down the window, all smiles, like a dog searching for fresh air. It's telling how his spirits lift the second he thinks I'm on the outs with love. He doesn't want me to be happy. He doesn't want anyone to be happy, especially love. He brags about his time in Vegas, one lie after another, twisting it all a mile a minute, deranged. And we can't get there fast enough, but I can't speed, the mug of piss. And he won't stop talking about the table minimums and hookers refusing to take his money. He doesn't say one true thing for the entire journey through all this brown land, blue sky, and he's so fucked up, so full of himself, verbally expunging, the loneliest man on earth. I can't tell you what a thing it is to see our first stop glimmering, tiny in the distance. Finally, the place where I can begin to kill him. The Clown Motel.
There it is, I interrupt him mid-rant about his host at the Monte Carlo. He drums his backpack, happy dog, and he tells me he has been here before. He has been everywhere, I get it. But this is my first time, and it's the greatest thing I've seen in the West so far. It's the wild, wild West I wanted. The blue and white motel is decked out with clown signs, and the giant Nevada lettering above the building is straight out of a ghost town or a Tarantino movie. Welcome to the Clown Motel. The lobby is supposed to be a tightly packed swarm of clown dolls from different eras, but I won't get to see it because I'm going to murder 40 today, so I can't very well go into the fucking lobby. 40 is finally calm and his backpack is closed and he puts his baggie away. He checks himself in the mirror and he says this was a good call.
I love clowns, he says,
and of course he loves clowns. He's an imbecile, a clown himself. With his puffy red nose and his wild swath of dirty hair, his belly fat jiggling in his turquoise shorts, a nightmarish thing that frightens love, haunting her, weighing her down, the thing that she's supposed to love, the way the world initially instructs children to love clowns, even though we all know deep down that they're creepy old puffy men in masks leering at children.
Hey, 40, I say, you should look online to make sure they have rooms.
Old sport, you and me are for sure shooting something here, he sighs. That will be aces. We could even call it aces, like Ocean's 11, but with Saw
and the clowns are the victims and the bad guys are those fucking tourists, the fucking little boyfriend and girlfriend holding hands and shit.
Right, I say. So the clowns are the